The Dead. Lily the servant was very busy. As soon as she had let one gentleman into the house and helped him to take off his coat, the doorbell rang again. She had to run back along the hall and open the door again. It was lucky that she did not have to help the ladies as well. Miss Kate and Miss Julia had thought of that, and the bathroom upstairs was now a ladies' dressing room. Miss Kate and Miss Julia were up there, talking and laughing, and then coming to the top of the stairs to ask her who had arrived. The three Mrs. Morkan's Christmas dance was always a great event. Everybody who knew them came to it, family, old friends of the family, singers from Miss Julia's choir, some of Miss Kate's older pupils, and even some of Mary Jane's pupils as well. It was always a success. It had happened for years and years, ever since Kate and Julia had moved into the dark old house with their niece, Mary Jane, after the death of their brother, Pat. That was 30 years ago. The Mrs. Morkans rented the house from a businessman, and he had his offices on the ground floor. Mary Jane was then a little girl, but now she brought most of the money into the family. She had studied music, and now she was a teacher and also played the organ in an important city church. Many of her pupils were from rich families, and they gave a big concert every year at Dublin's main concert hall. Old as they now were, Mary Jane's aunts still did a lot. Julia was getting grey, but she was still the most important singer in her church choir. Kate was getting too old to go out much, but she still gave music lessons to beginners. Lily worked in the house for them. The aunts and their niece did not have a lot of money, but Lily managed everything well, and the three Mrs. Morkans were happy with her. Lily did not think they were difficult people, but knew she should never argue with them. Of course, the sisters were a little worried tonight. It was their big night. It was after 10 o'clock, and their nephew Gabriel and his wife had still not arrived. And they were terribly afraid that Freddie Malins would be drunk when he got there. They did not want any of Mary Jane's pupils to see Freddie like that. And when he had had a lot to drink, it was sometimes hard to manage him. Freddie always came late, but they were worried about Gabriel. The sisters kept going to the top of the stairs to ask Lily if Gabriel or Freddie had come. "Oh, Mr. Conroy," said Lily to Gabriel when she opened the door for him. "Miss Kate and Miss Julia thought you were never coming. Good evening, Mrs. Conroy." Gabriel stood on the doorstep, wiping his boots, while Lily led his wife to the bottom of the stairs and called out, "Miss Kate, here's Mrs. Conroy." Kate and Julia came down the stairs and kissed Gabriel's wife, Greta. They asked where Gabriel was.
"Here I am, Aunt Kate. Go on up, I'll follow," Gabriel called out from the doorstep.
He continued wiping his feet while the three women went upstairs, laughing. There was a light dust of snow on his coat.
"Is it snowing again, Mr. Conroy?" asked Lily, helping him take his coat off.
Gabriel had known Lily since she was a child. "Yes, Lily," he answered. "I think it's going to snow all night." He looked up at the ceiling, which was shaking. He could hear the dancing in the music room above them, and he listened to the piano. Then he looked at Lily, who was hanging his coat up.
"Tell me, Lily," he asked, "do you still go to school?"
"Oh, no, sir," she answered. "I left school more than a year ago."
"Oh, then," said Gabriel, laughing, "I suppose we'll soon be going to your wedding with your young man."
Lily looked back at him over her shoulder.
"Men today talk a lot, but they only want one thing," she said crossly.
Gabriel felt he had made a mistake. "I was wrong to say that," he thought. He was quite a tall young man, and just a little heavier than he wanted to be. His face was red, and the colour went as far as his smooth black hair. He had no moustache or beard, and he wore bright gold glasses. He quickly took a coin from his pocket and gave it to Lily.
"Lily," he said, "it's nearly Christmas, isn't it? Here's a little..."
"Oh, no, sir," said Lily. "I couldn't."
"But it's Christmas."
"Christmas," said Gabriel, starting up the stairs.
"Well, thank you, sir," said Lily.
Gabriel waited outside the music room until the dancing stopped. He was a little upset by Lily's sudden angry answer to his question about marriage. Then he took a piece of paper from his pocket and studied the notes he had made for his speech. He was not sure whether he should use the poem by Robert Browning. It was perhaps too difficult for many of the people there. Maybe an Irish song or something from Shakespeare would be more suitable. He did not want people to feel that he had had a better education than them. They would be annoyed, just as Lily downstairs had been annoyed. He started to think that his whole speech was a mistake. His two aunts and his wife came out of the ladies' dressing room. His aunts were now old women, and they were simply dressed. They both kissed Gabriel. He was their favourite nephew, the son of their dead sister Ellen.
"Greta says you're not going all the way home to Monkstown tonight, Gabriel," said Aunt Kate.
"No," said Gabriel. "We shouldn't have done it last year, Aunt Kate. The wind was blowing into the cab all the way home. Greta caught a terrible cold."
Aunt Kate nodded.
"Quite right, Gabriel," she said. "You can't be too careful."
"But Greta would walk home in the snow every night, if I let her," said Gabriel.
Greta laughed. "Gabriel worries a lot about me and the children. His latest idea is galoshes."
Aunt Kate started laughing wildly. Aunt Julia was not laughing. She looked at her nephew.
"What are galoshes?"
"Galoshes," said her sister. "Don't you know what they are? You wear them over your boots to keep them dry."
"Yes, that's right," said Greta.
"Gabriel says everyone wears them in Europe."
"Ah, in Europe,"
said Aunt Julia, nodding slowly. Gabriel seemed a little annoyed.
"There's nothing wonderful about galoshes," he said, "but Greta thinks they're funny."
Aunt Kate understood that it would be a good idea to change the subject of conversation.
"Where are you staying?"
she asked. "I've booked a room at the Gresham Hotel."
"Good idea," said Aunt Kate. "And what about the children?"
"It's just one night," said Greta. "Bessie will look after them."
"It's good that you have a girl like that, who you can trust," said Aunt Kate. "We've got Lily, of course, but I don't know what's happening to her. She's not the girl she once was."
Gabriel was going to ask his aunt about Lily, but she turned to look down the stairs. Aunt Julia was going down them to the front door. She had heard someone arriving.
"Where's Julia going?" asked Aunt Kate.
Julia stopped on the stairs, came back up, and said,
"Here's Freddy."
At that moment, the music stopped, and there was some clapping.
The music room door opened and people started to come out. Aunt Kate moved closer to Gabriel and whispered in his ear, "Gabriel, be a good fellow and go down and see if Freddy's all right. Don't let him come up if he's drunk. I'm sure he will be." Gabriel went to the stairs and listened. He could hear people talking downstairs. Then he recognised Freddy Malins's laugh. He went down the stairs noisily. "It's a good thing that Gabriel is here," Aunt Kate said to Greta. "I feel more relaxed when he's here." Then she turned to her sister. "Julia, I expect Miss Daly and Miss Power need a drink." A tall man with a grey moustache came out of the music room with a young woman.
"Can we get a drink too, Miss Morgan?" he asked.
"Julia," said Kate quickly, "take Mr. Brown and Miss Furlong to the dining room as well."
"I can look after the ladies," said Mr. Brown. "They all like me."
He led the three young ladies to the dining room. In the middle of the room was a large table. Across the end wall, there was a smaller table with plates and glasses and knives, forks and spoons. There was another small table with food on it, and a smaller table in the corner with drinks. Two young men were standing next to this table drinking beer. Mr. Brown led the three ladies to the drinks table. They told him that they never drank anything strong, so he opened three bottles of lemonade for them. Then he poured himself a large whiskey. He moved closer to the three ladies, and they felt a little uncomfortable at his hot face looking down at them. Miss Furlong, who was one of Mary Jane's pupils, turned to Miss Daly and asked her the name of the beautiful music she had just played. Mr. Brown, feeling ignored, turned to talk to the two young men. Aunt Kate came into the room and clapped her hands.
"We need more dancers," she called. "Two gentlemen and three ladies."
The two young gentlemen at the drinks table asked Miss Furlong and Miss Power to dance with them. Aunt Kate turned to Miss Daly.
"I know you've played the piano for two dances, but we need another lady to dance," she said. "Mr. Bartle Darcy, the singer, needs someone to dance with."
"I'd be very happy to dance with him," said Miss Daly.
The piano had started playing, and some new dancers went to the music room. Now Miss Julia came into the dining room. She turned nervously to look at something behind her.
"What's the matter, Julia?" asked Kate.
"It's Freddy," said Julia, "but Gabriel is with him."
Gabriel was bringing Freddy into the dining room. Freddy Malins was a man of about 40, as large as Gabriel, but with very round shoulders. His face was large and pale, with red on the bottom of his ears and at the end of his nose. He had a big, wide nose and large lips. His eyes were half closed and his hair was thin and untidy. He was laughing loudly at a story he was telling Gabriel and, at the same time, wiping his left eye with his left hand.
"Good evening, Freddy," said Aunt Julia.
Freddy said good evening to Kate and Julia and then saw Mr. Brown smiling at him from the drinks table. He crossed the room on shaky legs and started to tell the story again to Mr. Brown.
"He's not too drunk, is he?"
Aunt Kate asked Gabriel.
"Not too bad," said Gabriel, but his face was dark.
"He's a terrible fellow," said Kate.
"He promised his mother he would stop drinking last New Year. But come on, Gabriel,
Let's go and listen to the music.
Before leaving the room with Gabriel, she whispered something to Mr. Brown, and Mr. Brown nodded. Then, when she had gone, he turned to Freddy.
I'm going to give you some lemonade, Freddy, he told him. That'll be good for you.
Freddy took the glass in his left hand and continued with his story. Then, before he had even got to the end of his story, he started laughing and had to put the glass down to wipe his eye again. Gabriel could not listen while Mary Jane was at the piano playing a new, special piece of music. He liked music, but this piece was too clever, too modern, and it had no real tune. Some people had quietly left the room, and the only people who were really following the music were probably Mary Jane and Aunt Kate, who was turning the pages for her. Gabriel looked around the room and, seeing a framed picture of his mother on the wall, began to think about her. It was strange that she had had no talent for music. But Aunt Kate always said that his mother was the intelligent one in the family. Kate and Julia always seemed proud of their big sister, and her sons had done well in life. Gabriel had studied at the Royal University. Then, Gabriel remembered how unhappy his mother had been when he got married. She once said that Greta was a country girl who would not make a good wife for Gabriel. That was not true. And Greta had looked after his mother very well during her final illness. Gabriel knew that the music was ending when he heard Mary Jane repeating a tune from the beginning of the piece. Then there was a lot of clapping. The loudest clapping came from four young men who had gone to the dining room for drinks at the beginning of the music and then came back when it had stopped. Now there was more dancing, and Gabriel found that he was dancing with Miss Ivers. She was a young lady who talked a lot and had strong nationalist opinions. When they stopped dancing for a moment, she said,
I'm not pleased with you.
Why? Asked Gabriel.
You're writing for the Daily Express, she said. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Why? Asked Gabriel, trying to smile.
I'm ashamed of you, said Miss Ivers. Writing for a newspaper like that? I thought you were a nationalist.
Gabriel did not quite understand. It was true that he wrote for the Daily Express every Wednesday, a newspaper that did not approve of nationalist politics, and for this he was paid 15 shillings. But he only wrote about new books, not politics. Gabriel loved all the books that they sent him, and he did not really do it for the money. He earned enough from his teaching at college. Gabriel wanted to tell Miss Ivers that books were more important than politics. But they had been friends for many years, as students and then as teachers, and he did not want to sound too important. In the end, he said that he did not think it was political to write about books. The dance took them away from one another, but when they came together again, she took his hand warmly and said in a friendly voice, I was only joking. A friend showed me your piece about Robert Browning's poetry. It was very good. They passed again, and she said,
Will you come to the west of Ireland this summer? We're going to stay on the Aran Islands for a month. Mr. Clancy is coming, and Mr. Kilkelly, and Kathleen Kearney. It would be great if Greta could come too. She's from the west, isn't she?
Her family is from Galway, said Gabriel.
But you will come, won't you?
She said, putting her warm hand on his arm.
I'm afraid I've arranged to go on a long bicycle trip with some fellows.
Where are you going?
she asked. There are people I go with every year.
But where?
Well, we usually go to France, or Belgium, or perhaps Germany, said Gabriel. He knew Miss Ivers would not approve.
Why go to France and Belgium instead of your own country?
Well, said Gabriel, it's good to speak another language and to have a change.
But you have your own language to speak, Irish,
said Miss Ivers.
Everyone speaks Irish on the Aran Islands.
Well, said Gabriel, I don't honestly think Irish really is my language.
And haven't you got your own country to visit, and its people?
To tell the truth, said Gabriel, I'm tired of my own country.
Why?
Asked Miss Ivers. The dancing took her away again, but when she came back, she smiled and whispered in his ear,
You've become an Englishman.
The dance finished, and Gabriel went to a corner of the room where Freddy's mother was sitting. She talked a lot, and Gabriel did not really need to listen. He was thinking about the conversation with Miss Ivers. Of course, she was a strong nationalist, but it was unkind of her to talk to him like that in front of other people. Greta came through the dancers to talk to him. Aunt Kate asks if you will carve the goose as usual, she said. Miss Daly will carve the ham, and I'm going to help with the pudding.
All right, said Gabriel.
Were you arguing with Molly Ivers?
Asked Greta.
Not arguing, said Gabriel. She just wanted me to go to the west of Ireland this summer, and I said I wouldn't.
His wife clapped her hands. Oh, Gabriel, let's go, she said. I'd love to see Galway again.
You can go if you like, said Gabriel coldly.
Greta looked at him for a moment and then turned to Freddy's mother and asked,
What do you think of my husband, Mrs. Mallins? He's not always perfect, is he?
Greta walked away across the room. Gabriel went to the window and looked out at the falling snow. It would be much more pleasant to be out there than in here. He thought again about his speech. Miss Ivers would be listening. It would be better not to talk about English poetry or books. Then he thought of something. He would talk about Aunt Kate and Aunt Julia. And he practiced some words in his head.
Ladies and gentlemen, the older generation may have had its faults, but I think it was a friendlier generation, simpler and kinder than the new generation, which perhaps has had too much education.
Very good. Listen to that, Miss Ivers. It was suddenly quieter in the room. Mary Jane was sitting at the piano, and Aunt Julia was walking across the room to her. Then Aunt Julia turned, ready to sing. There was some clapping, which stopped when Mary Jane started playing. It was an old favourite of Aunt Julia's, and she sang it beautifully. When she had finished, there was loud clapping, and Freddy went across the room to talk to her.
I've never heard you sing so well, he said. Your voice was so clear and fresh. I never heard it so clear and fresh. Never.
I agree, said Mr. Brown. I think her voice has got better.
Aunt Julia smiled sweetly.
30 years ago, my voice wasn't too bad, she said. But we're all hungry now, and I think it's time for supper.
Outside the music room, Gabriel found his wife and Mary Jane trying to persuade Miss Ivers to stay for supper. But Miss Ivers was putting on her coat.
It was time to go, she told them.
Just 10 minutes for a little food, said Greta.
No, I can't, said Miss Ivors.
Did you not enjoy the dancing? Asked Mary Jane.
Very much, said Miss Ivors. But you must let me go.
How will you get home?
Oh, it's not far. A short walk.
If you will allow me, said Gabriel, I'll walk to your home with you and then come back here.
No,
said Miss Ivors, laughing.
I can look after myself very well.
Then she said good night in Irish and left.
Gabriel wondered if she was leaving because she had argued with him. But she seemed happy. She was laughing when she left.
Aunt Kate came out of the dining room.
Where is Gabriel?
She cried.
The goose is waiting.
Here I am, said Gabriel, and ready to carve 10 geese, if necessary.
A fat brown goose was at one end of the big table, and there were plates of vegetables down the middle. There was more food on the side tables and more drink. Gabriel sat down at the head of the table, picked up the big knife and fork, and started work. He was good at carving, and he liked to be at the head of a table covered with good food.
Miss Furlong, what would you like? He asked. Some white meat or a wing?
Just a small piece of white meat.
Miss Higgins?
Oh, anything, Mr. Conroy.
Gabriel sent pieces of goose down the table, while Miss Daly sent pieces of ham. Lily and Mary Jane helped the guests with the vegetables. Aunt Kate and Aunt Julia brought drinks to the table. Finally, when everyone had filled their plates, Gabriel and his aunts could eat too. After the goose, there was pudding, and then fruit and chocolate that the guests passed along the table, and Aunt Julia offered more drinks. As the last glasses were filled, the conversation died away, and Aunt Julia, Aunt Kate, and Mary Jane looked at Gabriel. It was quiet now, and Gabriel pushed back his chair. He stood up, put his fingers on the table, and started his speech.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been asked this year, as in earlier years, to do something very pleasant. I do not think I will do it very well, because I'm not a good speaker.
No, no, said Mr. Brown.
I ask you, continued Gabriel, to listen to me for just a few minutes. This is not the first time that we have been the guests of these kind ladies.
His arm waved towards his two aunts and his cousin, who suddenly all had red faces.
Every year, I feel more strongly that the people of our country are very good at one thing, looking after our guests. No other country does it as well, and we have done it for generations. Some people say we are too good at it, but I don't believe that, and I hope that we will continue to do it. I am sure of one thing. As long as these ladies live in this house, all their guests will be looked after in a friendly Irish way.
He looked around the table and saw that everyone was agreeing with him. He remembered that Miss Ivors had left rather unpleasantly, and he felt more confident now.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new generation is growing up now, with new ideas. People are serious about their new ideas, and believe in them strongly. But I am a little afraid that this new generation, with its education and ideas, will forget the old Irish ways of looking after our guests.
Yes, yes, said Mr. Brown loudly.
On these evenings, continued Gabriel, his voice a little softer,
we often think about sadder things. We think about the times when we were younger, and perhaps we think about the friends that we have lost. There are many sad things in our past, but we must not think about them too much. We need to think about the friends that we have now and the things that we need to do with the lives before us. And now, my friends, I think we should drink to our three friends, the three most important people in music in the city of Dublin today. Let us stand and drink to all three of them. All the guests stood up and turned to the three ladies and drank. Aunt Kate was crying, and perhaps Aunt Julia was too. The cold night air came into the hall, and Aunt Kate said, "Close the door. Mrs. Malins will get cold." "Mr. Brown is out there, Aunt Kate," said Mary Jane.
"Brown is everywhere," said Aunt Kate quietly. "But tell him to come in, Mary Jane, and close the door. I do hope he didn't hear me."
Mr. Brown came in from the front step, laughing loudly. He was wearing a long green coat. He pointed down to the corner of the road where Freddy was waving his hands wildly.
"Freddy is getting all the cabs in Dublin," he said.
Gabriel came into the hall, putting on his coat. "Is Greta down yet?" he asked.
"She's getting ready," said Aunt Kate.
Mary Jane looked at Mr. Brown and Gabriel in their long coats.
"I feel cold just looking at you," she said. "I wouldn't like to have your journey."
"I'd like a long drive now with a good horse," said Mr. Brown.
"We used to have a good horse,"
said Aunt Julia sadly. "The famous Johnny," Mary Jane laughed. Aunt Kate and Gabriel laughed too.
"What was wonderful about Johnny?"
asked Mr. Brown. "Our grandfather, Patrick Morgan, had a small factory," explained Gabriel, smiling. "He had a horse called Johnny, which walked round and round a wheel to drive the machines. One day, the old gentleman decided to go for a drive in the park. He put on his best clothes, got out his little old cart, and he and Johnny drove to the park. It all went well, until they got to the statue of King William on his horse. Maybe Johnny fell in love with the king's horse, or maybe he thought he was back at the factory. He began to pull the cart round and round the statue."
"Why is he doing that?" said the old gentleman. "It's very strange. I don't understand the horse."
There was a lot of laughing, interrupted by loud knocking on the door. It was Freddy.
"I could only get one cab," he said.
"Oh, we'll find another a bit further along the road," said Gabriel.
"Yes, we must get Mrs. Malins into this one," said Aunt Kate.
They all helped Mrs. Malins into the cab, and then Freddy got in next to her. Then Freddy invited Mr. Brown into the cab. The driver asked for an address, and Freddy and Mr. Brown each gave him an address. It was not clear which address to go to first, and soon everyone except the driver was laughing again. Finally, the cab started. Gabriel had not gone to the door with the others. He was in a dark part of the hall, looking up the stairs. A woman was standing at the top, and he suddenly realized it was his wife. She was listening to something. Gabriel tried to hear what it was. He heard a few notes on the piano, and then a man's voice, gently singing. The front door closed,
and Aunt Kate, Aunt Julia, and Mary Jane came towards Gabriel, laughing. Gabriel said nothing, but he put his finger to his lips and then pointed up the stairs. Now that the front door was closed, they could hear the singing more clearly. It was an old Irish song, and they could hear some of the words. Oh, the rain falls on my heavy hair, and the snow touches my skin. My love lies cold.
Oh, said Mary Jane. It's Bartle D'Arcy singing. I wanted him to sing earlier, but he wouldn't.
She ran up the stairs, but before she got to the top, the music stopped.
Is he coming down, Greta?
Greta said that he was, and she came down the stairs with Bartle D'Arcy and Miss Daly behind her. Mr. Bartle D'Arcy went to get his coat. When he came back, he explained that he had not wanted to sing before because he had a cold and his voice was not good. Everyone told him to keep warm, and Aunt Kate put his scarf round his throat carefully. They were all in a crowd round him except for Greta, who was standing by the window. She was not listening to the conversation. At last she turned, and Gabriel saw that there was colour in her cheeks and her eyes were shining. He felt suddenly happy.
Mr. D'Arcy, said Greta, what is the name of the song that you are singing?
It's The Girl of Ockram, said Mr. D'Arcy, but I couldn't really remember it. Why?
Do you know it? The Girl of Ockram, Greta repeated. I couldn't think of the name.
It's a very nice tune, said Mary Jane. I'm sorry your voice wasn't good tonight. Mr. D'Arcy, Miss Daly, Greta and Gabriel decided to walk through the snow to find a cab.
Good night, Aunt Kate, and thank you very much.
Good night, Gabriel. Good night, Greta.
Good night, Miss Morgan.
Good night, Mr. D'Arcy. Good night, Miss Daly.
It was still dark. There was a yellow light over the houses and the river. The snow was wet under their feet. Gabriel was watching Greta. She was walking with Mr. Bartle D'Arcy, holding her skirt up out of the snow. Looking at her, Gabriel's eyes were bright with happiness, and loving thoughts went through his mind. He wanted to run after her and catch her shoulders and whisper in her ear. He remembered moments from their life. A purple envelope with a letter from her inside it, next to his breakfast cup, his hand touching it lightly. There were birds singing in the trees. Another time, they were standing in a crowd at a station, and he was putting a ticket into her warm hand. He wanted to talk about those moments with her so that they could forget the boring, ordinary years of marriage and remember the passion and the good times. Their children, his writing, her work in the house had not interrupted their love. He wanted to be alone with her. When the others had gone and they were in their room at the hotel, he would call to her softly. Greta. She would be undressing, and perhaps she would not hear at once, but then she would turn and look at him, and then. On a street corner, they found a cab. Gabriel was glad of the noise inside, because he did not have to talk. The horse ran under the night sky, and Gabriel remembered a time when he was in another cab with Greta, on the way to the port, after their wedding. When the cab stopped at the Gresham Hotel, Gabriel jumped out
and paid the driver, ignoring Mr. Darcy, who said that he wanted to pay. Gabriel gave the man a shilling more than he asked for.
"A happy new year to you, sir," said the driver.
"And to you," said Gabriel. Greta took his arm for a moment while they got out of the cab and said goodbye to the others. He pressed her arm to his side and, feeling her touch, suddenly felt a strong passion for his wife. As they entered the hotel, he held her arm tightly. He felt that they had escaped their lives, their home and their friends, and were running away to start a new adventure together. An old man was half asleep in the hall of the hotel. He lit a candle and took them up the stairs. They followed. Gabriel wanted to put his arms round Greta. They went along a corridor and the old man opened a door. He put down the candle and asked them what time they wanted to be called in the morning.
8, said Gabriel. "And we don't need a candle. There is enough light from the street."
The old man left with the candle, and Gabriel locked the bedroom door. He took off his coat and went to the window. Then he turned. Greta had taken off her hat and coat, and she was standing in front of a large mirror, taking off her skirt. Gabriel watched and then said quietly, "Greta." She turned and walked towards him. Her face was tired and serious. It was not the moment yet.
"You look tired," he said.
"I am, a little," she answered.
"You're not ill?"
"No, just tired."
She went to the window and looked out. Gabriel waited again, and then said suddenly,
"You know that fellow, Freddy?"
"Yes," said Greta.
"Well, he's not a bad fellow. I lent him £1, and he gave it back to me tonight. I didn't expect it. I'm sorry he was with that man Brown tonight, though. I don't like him much."
"When did you lend him the £1?
Greta asked, but she was not really listening to him. Was something wrong? Gabriel stopped himself from shouting something about Freddy and his drinking and his £1. He wanted to take her in his arms, to make love to her. But he said, "Oh, a few weeks ago. He needed it for some job he was doing." He did not see her come up to him, but suddenly she was there. She reached up and kissed him.
"You're a very kind person, Gabriel."
Surprised and happy at the sudden kiss, Gabriel put his hand on her hair. It was newly washed, shining. Perhaps she was thinking the same as him. He wondered why he had not moved more quickly. He put his arm around her and whispered, "Greta, what are you thinking about?" She did not answer. He whispered again, "Greta, what is it?" "I think I know." She did not answer at first. Then, with tears in her eyes, she said,
"I am thinking about that song, The Girl of Ockram."
She ran to the bed and bent down, her head in her arms. Gabriel followed her and said kindly, "Why, Greta, why does that song make you cry?"
"I was thinking about a person long ago who used to sing that song."
"Who?" asked Gabriel, smiling.
"Someone I used to know in Galway when I was living with my grandmother," she said.
Gabriel was not smiling now. He was beginning to get angry.
"Were you in love with him?"
he asked.
He was a boy I used to know, named Michael Fury. He used to sing that song. He was often ill.
Gabriel said nothing. He did not want her to think that he was interested in this boy.
I can see him clearly now, she said after a moment. He had such big, dark eyes.
So, you were in love with him? Asked Gabriel.
I used to go for walks with him, she said, when I was in Galway.
A thought came into Gabriel's mind. Perhaps that's why you wanted to go to Galway with Miss Ivers, he said coldly.
She looked at him in surprise. Why?
I don't know. To see him, perhaps.
She looked away from him towards the window. He's dead, she said after a moment. He died when he was only 17. Isn't it terrible to die so young?
What did he do?
He worked in a factory, she said.
Gabriel thought about this person from the past, this boy from a factory. And he remembered his thoughts about his life with Greta and their love. But while he was thinking about Greta, she was comparing him to another man. He saw what a fool he was, organizing things for his aunts, giving stupid speeches, thinking about sex. He felt his face go red and turned away from the light so that Greta could not see him. His voice was a little warmer now. Were you in love with Michael Fury, Greta? He asked.
A little, she said.
Her voice was sad, and Gabriel began to realize that he was not going to get what he wanted that night. He took one of her hands in his. What did he die of, Greta? You said he was often ill.
I think he died for me, she answered.
Gabriel had felt that everything was going well for him, but now things were ruined. Everything was turning against him. He tried to push the idea away and continued to touch Greta's hand. He did not ask any questions because he felt that she was going to talk. Her hand was warm, and he touched it as he had touched that first purple letter from her on that spring morning.
It was the beginning of winter, she said. I was going to leave my grandmother's house and come up to Dublin for school. Michael was staying in a boarding house in Galway. His family lived in the country, and he was ill. I never knew what was wrong. He liked me very much, and we went out walking. But we never even kissed. He loved singing, and he had a very good voice.
And what then? Asked Gabriel.
When it was time for me to leave Galway and come to Dublin, he had got worse, and I wasn't allowed to visit him. I wrote him a letter and told him I was going away, but that I would be back in the summer, and I hoped he would be better then. Her voice was shaking a little, and she stopped for a minute. The night before I left for Dublin, I was upstairs in my grandmother's house in Galway. I heard some small stones hitting the window. I couldn't see anything out of the window, so I ran downstairs and into the garden, and there was the poor fellow, shaking with cold.
Didn't you tell him to go home? Asked Gabriel.
I asked him to go home at once, or he would die of cold. But he said he didn't want to live. He looked into my eyes, and I will never forget that.
And did he go home? Asked Gabriel.
Yes, he went home. But I had only been in Dublin for a week when he died. Oh, the day I heard that he was dead.
She could say no more and threw herself down on the bed, crying. Gabriel held her hand for a moment, then, feeling shy, let it fall and walked quietly to the window. She was asleep. Gabriel sat on the bed, watching her half-open mouth and listening to her long, deep breaths. So, a man had died for her. He thought now how unimportant he, her husband, had been in her life compared to that other man. He looked again at her face and her hair, and he felt sorry for her. He did not want to think it, but he knew that her face was no longer the beautiful young face that Michael Fury had loved and died for. He thought about how much his feelings had changed in the past hour. He had changed from being worried to happy, to annoyed, to sad. It had begun at the party, the supper, his foolish speech, the wine, the dancing, the laughing, and the wonderful romantic walk through the snow. He thought about poor Aunt Julia. She was getting old now, and she would soon be with her father and his horse. Soon, perhaps, he would be in that same dining room, waiting for her funeral, with dark clothes and a black hat. Aunt Kate would be next to him crying. But what could he say to her? He was getting cold. He moved carefully under the sheets and lay down next to Greta. One by one, they were all going to die. It would be better to die happy in the middle of a full life than disappear slowly into old age. He thought about how, for all those years, Greta had locked the picture of Michael's eyes in her heart when he had told her that he did not wish to live. Gabriel's eyes filled with tears. He had never felt like that about any woman, but he knew that such a feeling must be love. He imagined he saw the young man standing in the cold and rain. Gabriel saw others there, next to Michael. His mind had entered a world of shadows where the uncountable dead could be found. The real world where the dead had once lived was disappearing. He heard a noise against the window and saw that it was snowing again. He sleepily watched the snow falling and thought about his own journey towards the end of life. Snow was falling all over Ireland, on the hills and lakes and rivers. It was falling on every part of the lonely ground near the church where Michael Fury lay, on the stones and the crosses and the gate and the small trees. He heard the snow falling softly everywhere, on all the living and the dead.
Penguin Readers, Dubliners, James Joyce, Level 6. Retold by Nick Bullard. Illustrated by Matt Rota. Series Editor, Sorrel Pitts. Read by Patrick Moy. Copyright, Penguin Books Limited. 2022.